We're beginning the last parak, Testament Aleph. So most of this parak is going to deal with continuation of what we started talking about the last couple of Mishnayos and the Gemara on them, namely the whole matter of Yuchsin. The previous Mishnayos we were talking about from the point of view of what's the status of children from various kinds of unions, the ones that are also, the ones that aren't, the ones that are mutter, the ones that aren't mutter, etc. Here we're going to be talking mostly, the first couple of Mishnayos are going to be talking about who's allowed to marry who in the first place. Previously we talked about if someone marries a woman, he is allowed to, isn't allowed to, etc., then what's the din of the children? Here we're going to talk about so who is allowed to marry who? And what are the dinim involved in that? The Mishnah starts off, sort of yuchsim olam ribavel. 10 groups of yuchsin, meaning 10 types of Jewish families, came up from Bavel when they built the second Beis Hamikdash. We should mention, actually, I mean, the Gemara is going to associate this with Ezra. Historically, what it was is actually there were two times, there were two major waves of Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael in that period. There was, number one is 52 years after the Korban, when Koresh and Dariavesh destroyed the empire of Bavel and took over. So Koresh made his famous proclamation at the end of the last couple of Sukkim of Divrayam and the first couple of Sukkim of Ezra, that the Eivishter has put me as made me ruler over all the kingdoms in the world. He also commanded me to build a house for him in Yerushalayim. Josephus actually mentions an interesting thing, that they showed Kurdish the Nevuah of Yeshaya from 150 years earlier that mentioned that there's going to be the Kada of the Persian Empire was going to conquer Babel, the king Kurdish is going to allow the Jewish people to return to Eretz Yisrael. And look, you know, if the Jewish God was able to predict that, and the Nevi'im were able to predict that 100 odd years before I was even born, then it's something I better pay attention to. Anyway.
And he was Jewish?
No, he was a guy. He was a Persian. Kurdish was a Persian. Anyway.
What was the
Indian? The Indian was that the Eibishter decided that the Golas, it's time for the Golas to be over. We learned, actually, let's give the history briefly. So again, so Dariavesh and his son-in-law Kurdish conquered Babel and killed Belshazzar, destroyed that empire. Dariavesh was king for a year, maybe less than a year, whatever. He died, Kurdish took over. Kurdish made this proclamation. At that point, it was 70... It was Dariavesh's son-in-law, yeah. The first Dariavesh, that is. At that point, it was 70 years since Nebuchadnezzar had first conquered Eretz Yisrael, which was 18 years before the Korban. So he made this announcement, anybody can go. 40-some thousand Jews came back to Eretz Yisrael, and they got to work starting to build the Beis Hamikdash. The local goyim, in particular the kusim, started harassing them about it. First, they tried to pretend we want to help you with it. The Jews rebuffed them and said that this is our Beis Hamikdash, not yours. You have no business with it. They ended up mastering on them to Kurdish, and then at some point during that period, Kurdish died and Ahasuerus took over. This is Ahasuerus from the Megillah. They mastered on the Jews. They're not just coming to build the Beis Hamikdash. They're going to rebuild Yerushalayim. They're going to rebel against you. They're going to make a whole kingdom of their own. And Kurdish / Ahasuerus believed that. Haman got involved also. Actually, Haman's son Shimshai, the Pasuk mentions, as one of the ringleaders of this. So they forced the cessation, the stopping of the building. 18 years passed. So during those 18 years is the whole reign of Ahasuerus. During that is the whole story of Purim, Mishnas Shalosh L'Molchoi, the Ahasuerus' party, Vashti being killed, et cetera, all the events in Megillah. Finally, Ahasuerus rules for, 14 years. He drops dead. His son, Dariavesh, this is the second Dariavesh, takes over. This is, by the way, in one place, the Pasuk calls him. That's Ahasuerus and Esther's son, yeah. In one place, actually, the Pasuk calls him Dariavesh HaParsi, because the original one was Dariavesh HaMadi, it was Media. Media and Persia were two rival kingdoms in those days that merged into one. Anyway, so this Dariavesh, the second Dariavesh, 2 years into his reign, the Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, come and tell the Jews, it's time to start to get to work again building the Beis Hamikdash. 18 years have passed. It's now 70 years since the Churban. So it turns out, in other words, that it came in stages. 70 years from when the Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael, they were given permission to return. 70 years from the Churban, they were given, the Nevi'im tell them, continue the building. They start again. Again, the local Goyish governor comes and asks them what's doing, who gave you permission. They tell them, Kurdish gave us permission many years ago. Send, if you want, send a letter to the government and have them check it out. They go, they look for it, they finally found in some favor, they finally find in some favor in a place in the kingdom, in one of the archives, they find a copy of Koresh's original proclamation, entitling them to build the Beis Mikdash. So Rabbi Yehuda says, good, in that case, I'm going to affirm that, and yes, let the Jews continue building their Beis Mikdash. 4 years pass, they finish it. A year after that, after they finally finish the Beis Mikdash, so now you're talking in Dariush's seventh year, Ezra leaves Babel with a bunch of other, with I think 800 or so Jews to come to Eretz Yisrael. They arrive there a few months later, and Ezra gets to work on shoring up the level of Yiddishkeit in Eretz Yisrael. That's the history in brief. So now, when we're talking about the Yerasa Yochs and Olam Babel. So
why just 800? Why not the whole Jewish?
So why only 40,000 the first time? The answer is that a lot of people felt comfortable in Babel. They didn't want to go. Yes. So in the case of Ezra, okay. So the thing is, the Gemara is going to talk about that Ezra made sure that all the psulim, all the psula yichus, come to Eretz Yisrael. However, we'll see in the Gemara. We'll talk about it in the Gemara and in Rashi. But the important point is that the Gemara is going to point out then. The Gemara is going to associate this whole business of the Asara Yochsin with Ezra. But really, based on this history, we see that Ezra and his group only came some 20 years after the original group that came with Zerubbabel. Nevertheless, we're still going to talk about it mostly in terms of Ezra. And we'll see, that when we get to this, we'll see actually Persis discuss specifically why certain circumstances, why we're quoting from the first group, from Zerubbabel's group, when we're talking about it in connection with Ezra. So we'll get to that. Zerubbabel was the original governor who was sent to lead the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. He's the one that Koresh appointed as the governor of the Jews who are returning to Eretz Yisrael. He was actually a grandson of Yechoniah, the next to last king of Malchus Yehuda. So I thought of Yochsin Olam Babel. Kahani Levi Yisraeli, Kohenim Levi Yisraelim.
They were all psulim?
No, they were saying. Some of them are kosher, but also they made sure to have all the psulim with them. We'll see in the Gemara. Chalolim. We know what those are. Geirim, Bacharuri, freed slaves, which basically have the same status in Halakha as Geirim. Mamzeri, freed slaves. Well, now they're considered Yidden once they're freed. Yeah, we're talking about Knan, who were free, yeah. So they're basically the same as Geirim. Mamzeri, Nisinim, which we've talked about a number of times, and in particular in Yevamos, we talked about them in Sobos. We talked about them. They're the descendants of the Givonim, the ones who tricked Yeshua and the Jewish people into accepting them. But they were made chot ve'etz and v'shev and mayim. They're to be workers, water drawers, and wood choppers for the Mishkan. And they're also to intermarry with regular Jews. Rashi says over here, Rashi brings over here from the Gemara and Yevamos that David made a zeder that they're not allowed to intermarry with the Jewish people. Tosfos discusses in Ksubas and various other Rishonim discuss in various other places. The pros and cons of that, is it actually an Issur only Dirabbanon, or is it actually an Issur Daraisa? And if it's an Issur Daraisa, what did David add to it? Maybe the Issur Daraisa only existed when the Beis Mikdash was standing, and David made it forever, so he told that they're cool people, or whatever, a lot of problems.
How can you let people who are not allowed to become Jews build the Beis Mikdash?
The Givonim, for example, the Nesinim, they're not allowed to intermarry freely with Jewish people. They're allowed to marry Mamzerim, for example, as we shall see. But they still needed them the same way as they needed them as wood choppers and when water drawers for the first Beis Mikdash, they were going to need them for the second Beis Mikdash too.
So they weren't.
I mean, the pashtus say they're no, not really geir arayis. That'd be the kurdim. No, the nesinim are in a certain sense geirim, but they're geirim who there's a restriction on them marrying Jews
because they were still practicing.
So again, no, not because they're still practicing avodah zarah. So okay, basically it boils down to there's two possibilities. One is because they're descended from the seven nations of Canaan, and therefore, maybe even after they're Megayer, there's an Isser for them to intermarry with Jewish people. Or the other possibility, we learned in Yevamos, that David made it there, he saw that they're still very cool people, and the whole story with Shaul's descendants, that instead of the Shaul had killed some Givonim and deprived them of their livelihood, etc., and instead of saying, you know what, fine, let's let bygones be bygones, we'll take money as compensation, we'll take whatever as compensation, they demanded lives, they demanded seven of Shaul's grandchildren be given over to them to kill. What good is that going to do them, you know? That's the kind of people they were. So David saw that they're that kind of people. He said, look, Jews are supposed to be Rachmanim by Shonim again, let's stop him. These guys are obviously not. Therefore, let them not intermarry with regular Jews.
But still,
they can still do work for the Beis Mikdash, and they can still, we even find that one of them became a Navi. One of them became in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, Hananiah ben Azur, in Yirmiyahu times. Originally, he was a true Navi. Later on, he became a false Navi. But the Rashi brings on, the Rashi in Yirmiyahu brings over there that that he was actually a Givon. The Pasuk describes he was from the city of Givon, and Rashi describes over there that he was actually a Givon, a Navi. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Next, so that's Nesini. Shsuki. We talked briefly about Shsuki and Asufi, the next group. We talked about them briefly in Ksubas. Shsuki is somebody who knows who his mother is. He knows that his mother is a Jewish woman, but he doesn't know who his father is. His father might have been a regular Jew. His father might have been a goy. His father might have been a mamzer. We don't know. He's called Shsuki because if he asks who his mother is, not even if he asks his mother who his father is, his mother will tell him to be quiet. Like, I don't know. I have no way of knowing.
That's a,
we don't know. We don't know. He's a Suffolk mamzer, Suffolk, yeah. Suffolk partial, Suffolk mamzer, yeah. And the 10th group is Asufi, which is foundlings, children who were abandoned as babies, which, again, we would assume that we would assume a common reason for that would be that that he's a apostle. He might even be a goy, or he might even be a mamzer, or what have you. And therefore, the mother figured, let me not bother. Let me throw him out in the street. Maybe somebody will adopt him. We'll see later on Ayin Beis. We're going to have a whole discussion about the pros and cons when a child is and isn't considered an Asufi. Meanwhile, there is such a concept of an Asufi. And again, it's a topic, is he a Jew, or is he a goy, is he a mamzer, or is he a kosher, etc.
Why is he thinking of the four mamzerim?
Because mamzerim, avadeh mamzerim. These are Asufi, they're Asufi. They might be them. Okay.
More kosher.
Maybe, but okay, I don't know. Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, the first three groups, are all allowed to freely intermarry. And as we learned in the previous parak, the child will go according to the father's status. Father is a Kohen, and the child will be a Kohen, etc. Levim, Yisraelim, and Chalolim, and Gerim, and freed slaves are all allowed to freely intermarry. Not Kohen, because they can't marry Giyoda. Kohen can't marry a Giyodas or a Shifchum Shacharis. But Levim and down, until Haruri, are all allowed to freely intermarry. And Geri, Haruri, Mamzeri, and Nesini, Shsufi, Batsufi, Kulam, Matarin, Love, Zebazet, and the last six groups from Gerim and down are all allowed to freely intermarry. Even the Shsuki and Asufi, even though they're only a Suffolk mamzer, we'll learn later on when we get into the whole sugya about them. We'll see why we'll discuss why it is that they're allowed to marry mamzerim. Basically, it boils down to when the Torah says lo yovin mamzer b'tal Hashem, is tal Hashem means the Jews who we know for sure are kosher Jews. Shsuki and Asufi, the whole point is we don't know. Therefore, they're allowed to marry mamzerim. Although we'll see that it's not so simple. We'll get to it in the middle of the Torah. What's the definition of Shsuki? Kosher makir, imaveinu makir, of it when he knows his mother, but he doesn't know who his father is. And again, when he asks, the Rashi says, if he says to a certain person, you're my father, imaveinu, his mother tells him to be quiet. Because that's not necessarily your father. Asufi is kosher nesaf min ashuk, is a child who was found and then gathered in from the street. So he doesn't know who his father is, and he doesn't know who his mother is. Abashol Shsuki Baduki. Abashol had a different name for the ninth group, the Shsuki. He called them Baduki. As we'll learn in the Gemara, what it boils down to is Abashol says that Baduki is Maloshan Bodik. You can investigate, you can interrogate the mother. If she says that the child is from a certain kosher person, then you can believe her. We'll discuss that later on in Gimelai and Dalit thereabouts. So the Mepharshim points out, by the way, there should have been on the face of it, there was an 11th group that came up Keres Yisrael. What about Avodim? The Pasuk actually mentions among the 40,000 who came with Zerubbabel's group, it says there were about 7,000 Avodim. Yeah, Avodim Kananim. Yeah. Usually Eved, unspecified in Gemara terminology, Avodim means Avodim Kananim. Yeah. So what about them? They give different answers. One of them is that we don't have to list them because there was no concern about them getting mixed up with the rest of the Jewish people. Everybody knew who they were. Another answer is, anyway, we're talking about Sarah Yuchsin, people who have Yichud, people who are Messiahic after their father, or after one of them. They can't marry with any of the others. Well, yeah. No, they can. We learned in the Mishnah at the end of the previous parak that a mamzer can marry a Shifcha. Yes, but the point is, one answer that's given is that an Eved, Ein Lo Chayis, as we said, Amadoyim L'chamer, they have no Yichud, they're not considered to be Miyuchud after their father, therefore you can't list them among the Yuchsin. So Gemara starts off. Absor yuchsim olam ubavo. My ear you determine olam ubavo. Why Ephesus is the Mishnah hap on the lashon that they went up from Bavo? Listen, hochol Eretz Yisrael. Let the Mishnah rather say they went to Eretz Yisrael. Isn't that the more important point? Especially, Mephoshim point out, given that the Gemara is going to explain what's the point of mentioning all these, again, the last seven groups from Chalali and on are Psula Yichus of one kind or another, and the point is we're going to say that Ezra made them all go to Eretz Yisrael. So the main point is not so much that they went up from Babel, but rather that they went up to they came to Eretz Yisrael, and that's where you'll find their descendants. So who cares why do we need to say Obamu Babel, they came up from Babel? Also, I think Marsha explains part of the question is, it's not just from Babel, they came from surrounding countries also. Anyway, the answer is Milsa Agav Uchik Mashmalam. The Mishnah, by the way, using that expression, wants to inform us of another fact. Kidatanya, as we learn, this fact is as follows. Kidatanya, as we learn in Braisa, the Pasuk says, V'kamtava Alisa Elamakam Asher Yivcha Hashem Elekecha, that if you have an argument in a matter of halacha, you get up and go to the place which Hashem chooses, meaning to the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. Malamed Shebeis Mikdash Gavoyah Mikol Eretz Yisrael. This teaches us that the Beis Mikdash is higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz Yisrael Gavoyah Mikol Aratus and Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other lands. So V'alisa, you're going
surrounding.
The Merovia Sadeh says that actually. He says that it's not, doesn't mean, yeah, I mean, in absolute terms, of course, your Eretz Yisrael is not the highest elevation place in the world. There's other places. He says, yes, it means the surrounding countries. Other Mephoshim talk about different other possibilities. Marsha talks about that it may, first of all, it may mean Beruchnius. It may also mean the idea that the world is a globe. If you take a globe and spin it, so you have Eretz Yisrael at the top, then everything else will be lower because that's how a globe is shaped. Okay, so then there's the idea, given that Eretz Yisrael is higher Beruchnius, then therefore, like if you're putting the globe in a certain position, then it makes sense to put it in that position, and therefore in that sense, it's higher than all the other lands. But yeah,
within
Eretz Yisrael. So again, when we say that Yerushalayim, when we say that the Beis Mikdash is higher than all Eretz Yisrael, what do we mean? Actually, the Radbaz has an interesting thing on this. He says, never mind the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Beis Mikdash is not even the highest point in Yerushalayim. The old city, higher they seem to find, but that's outside your shrine, you could argue. But yeah, I mean, you have the old city is higher than it is higher than Harabai. So you give a couple of interesting answers. One of them is that over the 2,000 years, we see how it is now, how the topography is now. We don't know how it was when the Beis Mikdash was standing. Based on a Gemara in Bava Basra, it seems that originally it was much taller. Yes. And the Goyim dug to look for the foundations of the Beis Mikdash, and they dug to find the Eben Shesia, and then whatever. And therefore the elevation, the topography might be different now than it was then. Yes,
very very hard. It took all the stones to build.
Yes. Right. So there's that. Yeah. So there's a different things of that nature. Yeah. But again, you know, there's also the possibility that maybe we mean the Beis Mikdash is just higher than the immediate surrounding area. I mean, it's not higher than the mountains in the Galil, for example, that are higher. But yeah. Okay. So, Bishlam Beis Mikdash Gavoya Mikol Eretz Yisrael. Okay, I can understand when we're saying the Beis Mikdash is higher than Eretz Yisrael. That's the point Hein Bessiv. That's why the Pasuk says, Divrei Ribeis Bisharecha, that if you have arguments in Halacha in your cities, literally in your gates, because that's where the Batei Dinim used to sit, is in the city gate.
Why they call them Ribeis?
Ribeis, the arguments. They're having an argument in Halacha, which they can't decide what the Halacha is. Yes. Therefore, the Kamtaval Lisa, therefore you get up and you go, and you get up, you stand up and you go up to the Beis Mikdash. So we see from that point that the Beis Mikdash is higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael.
It's Ruchnius.
What?
Not Ruchnius.
Well, but to a certain extent also Begashmius, yes. I was going to say there's a Gemara in Baba Basra that says that I think it's Rabbi Baba Chana or one of the Amorim, I don't remember, says that I saw the original Yerushalayim and it was three parasites high. Three parasites is about 8 miles, which if that meant literally, it would be higher than Mount Everest. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what about Ein Etam? Okay, so the vote is Ein Etam, yeah, it's 23 amas higher than the Beis Mikdash, but Ein Etam is not a city. One explanation is also when we're saying the Yerushalayim or the Beis Mikdash is higher than everywhere in Eretz Yisrael, we mean than all the cities. There can be mountains, there can be Har HaZeitim, for example, there can be whatever that are higher than it, but we're not talking about Ein Etam, it's not a city. Yes. Ela Eretz Yisrael Gavoya Mikol Aratzis Menolon. Where do we see? Actually, one other interesting answer that I saw is it may also include the height of the walls themselves. The Beis Mikdash, when it was standing, had very high walls. Once you count those in, if you have the topography itself, the Harabai, plus the height of the walls, and the walls were pretty tall. Gemara and Tainis where, again, I think Rabbi Baba Hanna says that one time he stood on the corner of one of those walls and he saw a guy, he saw down in the valley below him, I guess in the Nahal Kidron, he saw a guy riding by on a camel with a spear held up, and he looked as small as an ant. So the walls were very tall at one point. Once you add all that, then yeah, it may well have been higher than any place else. Anyway, Ela Eretz Yisrael Gavoyim Mikolar Rafas Menolan, where do we get from that pasuk, or from any pasuk, that Eretz Yisrael specifically is higher than all the other lands? Like this, because you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah that says, Lochain, therefore, because I'm going to take you out of Golos, Hine Yomim Boim Nu Mashem, that the whole days are coming in Mashiach's time, Lo Yer Omer Oid, that people will no longer say, or not even in Mashiach's time, even in the time of the Sefer HaMikdash, after the Geula from Golos Babel, Lo Yer Omer Oid, people are no longer going to say, Chai Hashem HaShehela Neitzom Eretz Mitzrayim, I swear by the life of the Eibishter, as the Eibishter lived, he who took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, P.M., rather, people are going to mention a greater nest that happened that the Eibishter did. Chai Hashem, as Hashem lived, Asher Helav, Asher Hevi, B'nei Yisrael, Eretz Tzafon, that he brought up, that he brought in the Jewish people from the northern lands, meaning Babel, when we call out the Asher Yidakim Shaman from all the other lands where I scattered them.
How do we explain that it's Egyptian domain dating like 3,000 years ago in Israel?
So, at one time, Egypt ruled over Israel. Why not? I mean, there's a reason why, you know, I mean...
These remains have been dated at the time of the Shibud.
Fine. Again, you know, I mean, we find, you know, during the famine in Yosef's time, everybody was coming from Canaan to Mitzrayim to buy grain,
Mitzrayim
right?
Mitzrayim was coming.
I'm saying Canaan was coming to Mitzrayim to buy grain, so it makes sense that Mitzrayim would have taken the opportunity then to rule over Canaan. Yeah. Okay. I'm not seeing where that's connected to anything we're talking about, but okay.
No.
Okay. Okay. Anyway. So anyway, the point is the expression Ashehela implies that the Eibishter brought them up, meaning that the surrounding lands, at least like Babel and the other lands where they went into Golos, are lower. So now, another linguistic question on the Mishnah. My iridatonic olu mibavel. Fine, okay, we established that we have to say the word olu in order to hint at this idea that Eretz Yisrael is higher than everywhere else. Nisni olu la Eretz Yisrael. Fine, but instead, why doesn't the Mishnah use the expression they went up to Eretz Yisrael? Again, the more important thing is not so much that they left Babel, but rather that they came to Eretz Yisrael. The answer is Messiah le Rabbi Elazar. This Mishnah, the wording of our Mishnah, supports what Rabbi Elazar said. The Amr of Elazar, like Ola Ezra mid Babel, Ezra did not go up from Babel, Ad Shasar Kasurlus Nakia, until first he made it like clean flour, like pure flour, but Ola, and only then he went up. Meaning he made sure that, no, not Kavanus, meaning that he made sure that all the Psula Yichus come with him from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that's the point. Ola mid Babel, the point is he wanted to make sure none of them stay in Babel. Now, why is that, Rashi says? Because he realized like this. As it is, during these years in Babel, there's been Psula Yichus intermarrying with Kashrut Jews, and that's creating a problem. So fine, at least up until now, there have been Chachamim in Babel who can keep track of who's marrying who and make sure to know which families are Kashrut, which families are Pasul. Now, though, all the Chachamim are going to Eretz Yisrael. Again, many of them had already gone with Zerubbabel. More of them now are going with Ezra. There's not going to be great Chachamim left in Babel, so there's no way it's going to be available to keep track of these matters of Yichud. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, we'll have the Lishkas HaGozis, we'll have the Sanhedrin. And the day-to-day job of the Lishkas HaGozis, besides, I mean, of course, the Sanhedrin did many things, but one of the regular things that they did on a day-to-day basis was to check matters of Yichud. So therefore, then they'll be able to keep track of things. Furthermore, actually, Rashi points out also, I mean, there's two things. The people of that generation, everybody will know Psulim are, so they'll know to stay away from them. And in following generations, again, the Sanhedrin will be able, the Lishkas HaGozis will be able to keep track of it. Okay? So that's the point. In other words, the point of the Mishnah mentioning Olam Mibavel is to inform us that there's a particular point that he made sure that they should all get out of Babel. Itmar. So now the we have a discussion among of Amiroyim. Abaya om olu meileim. And Abaya says that when we say asura yuchsin olu mibavel, Abaya says olu implies that they came up on their own. They voluntarily left Babel to come to Eretz Yisrael. V'rava amahelu. Whereas Rava says no, it means that they made them go up, bal kocha, whether they wanted to or not, for the reason that we just said. So the Kamisla give you the Rabbi Elazar. If we say that, if that's what the Machlokas is, then it means they're arguing about what Rabbi Elazar says. So I'm a Rabbi Elazar. This statement to Rabbi Elazar, like Allah Ezra Mibavel HaChasar Kiselus Nekiyah Allah, we would say Abaya left slay the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi East slay the Rabbi Elazar. So Abaya, we would say, does not agree with Rabbi Elazar's concept. So therefore, it's only Olu. These 10 groups, which include 7 different kinds of Sula Yichud, came up voluntarily on their own, but not necessarily all of them did. Whichever ones wanted to come, came, and whichever ones didn't. So there still may be Sula Yichud in Bava. Whereas Rava is saying Helum agrees with Rava Lazar that Ezra made sure that all of them come up.
Forced
them.
How did you
force I don't know. Forcing doesn't necessarily mean, the shaitim of Akrabim, right? I mean, it can also mean with persuasion. It can also mean that he persuaded that all the Psula Yichos should be coming to Eretz Yisrael. And the truth is, actually, the Psukim mentioned in Ezra over there, the Psukim mentioned that Ezra got it was officially, that he got an official royal commission from Daryavish that he's entitled, the apostle calls him over there, whatever, but that he had an official commission that his word is law, basically, that what he says in Eretz Yisrael in matters of halacha goes. So therefore, he would have had the ability to make sure that anybody who was to enforce, that anybody who was supposed to come from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael should come. Did you lock the door, wasn't it? Okay. Or another way you could look at it, we could say both Abaya and Rava agree with Rav Elazar's concept that Bavel is Kesolos Nikia. No, the Machlokas rather is as follows. Mar Sava Aprushi Aprushinu. Abaya would hold that what happened was while they were still in Bavel, Ezra and the other Chachamim of that time made sure to separate them out, made sure to announce these people are apostles, and everybody should know not to, all the Chedim should know not to marry them. Therefore, they went up on their own. Because that way they figured, actually, that like this, if they're back home in Bavel, everybody knows who they are and knows not to marry them. Like this, if they go to Eretz Yisrael, they figured, now we'll be able to get away with it. We'll be able to claim that we're Chedim, nobody will know the difference, and randomly to marry whoever we want. Well, as we're going to say in a minute, actually, because of the Psula Yichus that came to Eretz Yisrael, and maybe everybody didn't know who they were, therefore we're going to say that Eretz Yisrael, you can't be sure people's Yuchsin as much. We'll see in a minute. Umar Sababar Kochayu Asukinu, whereas Rava takes the view that no, even the bringing them up to Eretz Yisrael was done by Kocham. Bishlem the Mandama Olu. Okay, so now we can understand, according to the opinion, that they went up on their own. Which again, going up on their own, as we just said, implies that some of them can now pretend to be kosher yidden and marry whoever they want. Hainu d'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel. And now we understand why Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Shmuel, kol arotas isa l'Eretz Yisrael, that all the other lands aside from Bavel are an isa compared to Eretz Yisrael. Isa literally means a dough. Rashi says it's like you have a dough, you mix in, there's water, there's good flour, there's a melt, basically. And that's a good way of putting it, So all the other lands are like a melting pot relative to Eretz Yisrael, meaning at least in Eretz Yisrael you have the Koyanim there, therefore there is a certain amount of, checking after Yuchsin, because if nothing else, the Koyanim need to be sure to marry among people who have Yuchus. The Eretz Yisrael is still a Bavel, but Eretz Yisrael is an Issa relative to Bavel, because again, you have these Psula Yichus who are in Eretz Yisrael, where their identities are not always known that they're Psula, and therefore they end up intermarrying with Toshita families, and therefore the whole thing is like a mixture, like a melting pot, whereas in Bavel they're careful not to, because they don't have any Psula Yichus there. Elam, Andrama Helum, but according to Rava's explanation, that they actually brought them up by force. Well, when they brought them up by force, they made sure to have a curl so that everybody should know these people are apostles, don't marry them. So why would Eretz Yisrael or Bavel be any different? Maybe Yadinu, they know who's who. And the answer is Nihidi Yadi Lahu Dara. Fine. People will know in that generation who the Psula Yichus. L'dora Achrin L'yadi. They won't necessarily know in future generations. So in future generations, it'll all gotten mixed up. Actually, when you get down to it, also, I think in Doris or Shonim, it explains that when you get down to it, I mean, we know there were many periods during the Second Beis Mikdash when conditions were very difficult in Eretz Yisrael. They were ruled over by the Greeks and later on by the Romans. The Sanhedrin was being interfered with. There were Chachamim being killed at various times. So even there may have been, that's what once you have Psula Yichus over there, it's very easy. All you need is a few years when the Sanhedrin's functioning is breaking down, also because of Dukim or whatever, and all of a sudden everybody's mixed up and you don't know who's who. Another one. Bishlam Lamandama Olu. Okay, now
that's
another. Yeah. Well, that's why we're saying, Kol Arot, that's what we're saying. Eretz Yisrael is still above all. Because after all, said and done, there's more confusion of Yuchsin in Eretz Yisrael, even though on the one hand, yes, they have the Lishkas HaGadot there, and their job, the Sanhedrin and the Lishkas HaGadot, and their job is supposed to be to check out these things. But not always were they able to function. There were times when they were being interfered with by one or another kind of persecution.
And all these Jews in Eretz Yisrael eventually were taken for post that into Galut.
That's also true. I mean, we're primarily talking about during the Sefer Mikdash and a couple hundred or 200 years after it, during the time of the Amoraim, when most of the Jews were still in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, I mean, there came, obviously, by the time you get to the Middle Ages or something, by the time you get to the times of the Goyim and the Rishonim and whatever, where there's very few Jews left in Eretz Yisrael, yeah, I mean, all of this doesn't really apply anymore.
That's why it applies outside Eretz Yisrael.
No, but we're saying Kol HaRotz, there's not really a difference in Yuchsin between outside Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, yeah. I mean, there's also, nowadays, there's not a difference between the Yuchsin and Bavel and anywhere else either, you know, that's it. Bishlam and Mandama Olu, okay. We can understand, according to Abaya's explanation, that Olu, that these Psula Yichus came to Eretz Yisrael, and not just the Psula Yichus, the Kshedim also, that anybody who came in either group, in Zerubbabel's group or in Ezra's group, came voluntarily. Then now we understand why the Pasuk says, Ezra described with his group, he says, "Va'ek b'semel anor ha'bo'al achva." Ahava, it really is. Actually, I gathered them by the river that flows to Ahava. Va'nach nasham yomim shloisha. We camped there for 3 days. Va'avino ba'omav ha'koyanim. I was checking out among the people and among the koyanim to see who's there and who isn't. And I couldn't find any levim over there. And the pasuk continues that he had to send messengers back to Bavel to bring levim. Yeah. Which actually we learned in Yevamos that is the reason why Ezra made a knas on the Levim, that he took away from them, where we had a machloek with what exactly the knas consisted of, but he did something with them in my tradition, either that the Kohenim as well as the Levim can get it, or that it's taken away from the Levim and given only to the Kohenim.
Eventually they didn't want to go and curse them?
That they're not curse them, but cancel them. Yeah. Now, Rashi points out over here that actually it's not to say there were no Levim. What it was is there were no Levim who were, I mean, especially Tosfos points out, I mean, our Mishnah says Levim came up, and then the list of Zerubbabel mentioned Levim. So what are you talking about? Yeah, so Rashi and Tosfos both mention, based on a Medrash, that there were Levim, but these Levim were missing their sons. What happened? Going back 50 years before Zerubbabel's Aliyah, when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis Hamikdash and took all the Jews into Golos, Al Naras Bavel, Kuflam Zion and Tilim. What do we say over there? The Goyim are saying to them, Shir Alonu Mashir Tzion, Shir Alonu Mashir Tzion, sing us some of the songs of Tzion, and they answer, Eich Nasser Ashir Hashem Alam Matnecha, how can we sing Hashem's songs in an alien country? They don't just mean, how can we, as it wouldn't be right to do. They mean, the Rashi mentions it over there also on the Pasuk, it means they're saying we physically cannot. Because what they did is they cut off or they bit off whatever their sons so that they couldn't play the harps, violins, whatever instrument it is. And that way, like they're literally saying to the Goyim, how can we? We're physically incapable. So now these Levim lived through the Golos. They have this close to now come back to Eretz Yisrael. But they're missing their sons. You need people who are able to play as musicians in the Beis Hamikdash, and you don't have.
Well, you're not allowed to do that now.
But in this case, if it was that, or that they're going to be forced to take the songs from the Beis Hamikdash and play them for the Goyim, then they felt the right thing to do. Okay. Actually, Marsha points out an interesting thing based on the Pesukim over there. We're going to quote in a few lines a pasuk that mentions that there were Kohenim, Levim, there were Meshurim, singers, Shurim, gatekeepers. Why are they listed separately than Levim? Marsha says an interesting point. He says because of this shortage of Levim at that time, temporarily they had to say, you know what? Usually the musicians in the Beis Hamikdash are only Levim. Like this, you don't have enough. But less rare, temporarily, we're going to have regular Yisraelim do that until there are enough Levim. Right. Anyway, so the point is that in Ezra's group, at least, there were Levim, and in the original group, again, there were Levim, but only the ones with the cut-off thumbs. In Ezra's group, same thing, that's why you have to send back for more, people who don't have cut-off thumbs. So the point is that the point of the Gemara's question is that we see, he starts off by saying, Va'avino ba'am v'akoyim, I have to check out who exactly is there. Implying he didn't know. Whoever volunteered to come with him came, and he didn't know until they had this camp by Nahar Ahava, and he checked it out. El Mandrama Helum, but according to Rava, we're saying that he forced everybody to come up. and all of Sodom to come up. Hamizadahiri. The whole point is we're careful. He knows. He has a list of who's there and who's not. That way, does he mean all of a sudden he discovers there are no good Levim? The answer is Nehidi Israel Psulim. Yes, they have to have a list in order to be careful of the Psulim to know not to intermarry with them. The Kshedim, Lo Yizahar, they have no particular reason to have a list of the Kshedim. Levim can marry any Kohen or any Levi or any Israel. Therefore, he wouldn't have had a reason to list, to make sure which Levim and which Levim are and aren't there. And therefore, he only discovered that. Now we're going to go through now the Gemara is going to start going through the 10 groups and showing how we have psukim that show that all those 10 groups were involved in this Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Again, here the Gemara associated it with Ezra, but really we're going to see some of the psukim that we quote are actually going back to Zerubbabel, group. The Hamachne from the Haflah explained that. Even now, it's true. Why Taka didn't Ezra? You have to ask anyway. Why didn't Ezra originally go up with Zerubbabel's group 20 odd years earlier? Why did he wait so long? The reason is the Medrash tells him because his Rebbe Baruch ben Neriah was still alive. Baruch ben Neriah was a Talmud of Yirmiyah. It's not just he respected him. Baruch was too old to be able to travel, and Ezra did not want to leave Babel as long as his Rebbe is still alive and he can learn Torah. In fact, the Gemara says in Megillah, based on that you see from that learning Torah is even greater than building the Bismithish. Because we see that Ezra only showed up after Baruch passed away. Or he showed up only after the Bismithish is completed being built.
So you have to stay with your Torah teacher.
Yeah. So the point is, however, the Hamachna says...
What were you saying?
The Baruch ben Neriah was the Rebbe.
Baruch ben Neriah.
Yeah. So Hamachna says, though, that nevertheless, we can assume, or the Gemara is assuming at least, that even the Aliyah 20-odd years earlier, by Kodesh's proclamation that was led by Zerubbabel, Ezra was still working behind the scenes to make sure that the Psula Yichus go with him. So obviously he didn't get all of them, which is why he had to get some of them, maybe more developed during those 20 years, and therefore he had to call them out when he himself came to Eretz Yisrael 20-odd years later. So therefore the Gemara can be bringing Sukkim from the original Aliyah from Zerubbabel's time to illustrate the idea that Ezra made sure that all the Psula went out. So, Kahani Levivi Israeli, how do we see there were those three? Menolam de Slikul, where do we see that all those three groups went to Eretz Israel? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Vayeshva Koyanim Alavim, or Minaam, the Koyanim, the Levim, some of the people, meaning the Israelim, the Meshurim, the singers, the Ashurim, the gatekeepers. Again, normally Meshurim and Shurim would be Levim themselves. Again, Marsha explains that temporarily they may have had to have some of them be Israelim because of the shortage of qualified Levim. Va'nesinim and the Nesinim, they all settled Ba'orehem in their cities. V'chol Yisrael and the rest of the Jewish people also Ba'orehem settled
there. They had towns of themselves?
So there were towns in Eretz Yisrael that were all or mostly Jewish. But when we say Ba'orehem, usually, primarily what we mean is that each group settled more or less in their ancestral city. The Pesukim over there in Ezra, and again repeated in Nehemiah, describe you had there were groups of people who were grouped by families by the name of their ancestor. There were groups that were grouped by the name of the city they came from, the people of Beis Lechem, the people of Gibeon, the people of this, the people of that. So they settled in the original city that their ancestors came from two generations earlier at the time of the Golas. So we see that there were Kohanim, Levim, and Israelim, and also in the city, by the way, we see in that passage. Chalolei Geirim v'Charuri. Next, the Mishnah had mentioned there were Chalolim, there were Geirim, and there were freed slaves. So Chalolim and Nolan, where do we see that there were Chalolim among them? Like this, Titania. We learn in a Braisa, we learn this in Ksubas as well. Rabbi Yossi Omer G'dola Chazaka. Rabbi Yossi says, you see how great Chazaka is, that it's something that you can rely on. Shenema, you have a pasuk in Ezra that says as follows. Bnei HaKoyanim, among the children of the Koyanim, there were Bnei Chavaya, Bnei HaKoyt, Bnei Barzillai, the names of families. Bnei Barzillai, the children of Barzillai, Ashalokach Bnei Barzillai HaGiladi Isha, some Koyan had married one of the daughters of Barzillai HaGiladi, Vayikore Al Shmam, and the family was named after him. Barzillai HaGiladi was a rich Yid who lived in the time of David HaMelech. When David was running away from Absalom, Barzillai supported him in his court for those few months. So at some point, some Kohen married one of his daughters, and then the family was called the family of Barzillai. Hey, Tosa continues, Ela Bikshu Ksavam Amsiachim.
Barzillai was himself.
He himself was Israel. Ela Bikshu Ksavam Amsiachim. These groups, these Bnei Chavaya, Bnei Hakoyet, and Bnei Barzillai, looked for their Ksav Yichus. They looked for their documents that show their Yichus as Kohenim. Velonim so, but they couldn't find them. By a Goyal, and we're not Kohuna, so therefore they were rejected from the Kohuna. They're considered halal, in other words. Vayomer Hatirshasa Lahem, Hatirshasa said to them, Hatirshasa in Chem. Interesting thing the Yerushalmi mentioned.
So the
Ibn Ezra says that's a Persian title. The Yerushalmi has another interesting take on it. The Yerushalmi, we know from the Pesukim in the beginning of Nehemiah, that Nehemiah was the cupbearer for King Daryavish, Shasta told him in the Pesuk over there. Meaning that he was the one, he was a Saramashkin. He was the one to bring him his wine to drink. Now, wine of Goyim would be Stam Yenim, at least maybe not Yain Netzach, maybe they're not of Debra Zara so much, fine, but at least Stam Yenim. It should be also for him to drink. However, the Chachamim gave him a heter to. As the cupbearer, he's going to have to taste the wine before he gives it to the king to show that it's not poisoned. Like this, he has such an important job where he's able to intercede on behalf of the Jewish people. And in fact, he was. And Sefer Nehemiah describes how he asked the Daryavish to send him to Israel to become the new governor over there to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim. So Hatir Shasa is Hitir Shasa. They gave him a heter to drink. And therefore, he called Hatir Shasa. So Hatir Shasa, meaning Nehemiah, says to them, Asher lo yoichlu mikodesh hakadoshim, that they are not only these families, they're not allowed to eat from the kodesh hakadoshim, ad amoid koyin la urim b'tumim, until a koyin arises who will wear the urim b'tumim. Which means, now there was no urim b'tumim in the time of the second Mishnah, that's what Rashi points out. Therefore, it's the equivalent of saying, you can't until Mashiach comes. When Mashiach comes, and they have the third Mishnah, then we'll have the urim b'tumim, then your status will be clarified, because as we'll learn later on in Alephine Bays, that the Mashiach times, the yichus of the koyinim and levim will be clarified.
And Mikodesh Yachu, Mikodesh Kodesh.
Wait, we're going to explain soon what Mikodesh HaKadosh means. So, thus far the pasuk. So now, Rabbi Yossi is explaining, what does it mean? V'omalahem, it means that Nehemiah is telling them as follows. Hareyat v'chazkatzen. It means that you can continue to have your chazakah. So what is it? Up until now, you had a chazakah of being koyanim. Only now that we look for these Kav Yichus, then we said that not. You're considered chalodim. You can't serve in the Bais Mikdash, for example. However, let's consider. Now, in what sense were you koyanim in Chutz La'aretz, in Babel? There's no kavanas to eat over there. You were able to eat kodshei agvul. You were able to eat truma and chal. Which midrabanan, based on the takana of the Nevi'im, truma is given in Babel as well. So you did that. Afkanami b'kot shagvul. Therefore, here in Eretz Yisrael, you can continue with that chazaka. You can eat truma, but not korbanah. Question is, I'm going to ask the Lamando Amal Mal, fine. Well, Lamando Amal Mal and the Trimal Yuchsin, but what about? We had a whole discussion in Ksuvas, also in Yuvamas, about the question, if you see somebody eating truma, can you assume that he's a Koyan and consider him on that basis, a Koyan Miyuchas? There is an opinion that you can. Which Tosfos points out, we're not actually talking about literally them eating. We're not literally talking about them eating truma, because eating truma, even an eved of a kohen can eat truma. What we mean, not truma, Tosfos over here, Tosfos and Tzuvos. It means that we see him actually receiving a portion of truma in the granary, where they didn't do that for avodim, precisely for that reason. They only did it to the genuine kohen. So if now in Lahore here you're going to be giving them truma in the granary, according to the opinion that Malan the truma liyosin. What's going to happen? You're going to have these families of halalim, or suspected halalim, are going to eat truma. People are going to mistakenly think that they're full-fledged kohenim. How can you do that? How can Nehemiah be allowing them to eat truma? The answer is, shiny host of the riach hazkai. Yes, but it's different in this case because their chazaka itself is damaged. Which means, Rashi says, the very fact that they're not eating from the korbanos means that people will realize, wait a minute, this guy, we're thinking he's a kohen, but we see he's not eating korbanos. We know that there's something fishy over here. Tosfos says that's not what it means. Tosfos over here says that's not what it means. That, okay, very nice, they're not eating korbanos. You still have, according to the opinion, malin the truma liyufsin, then you still, they're going to see them eating truma and think that they're miyufas. So Tosfos says the very fact that they were looking for the ksav yuchus and didn't find it, it'll be known that was the case with these families. Whenever somebody sees them eating truma, they're going to say, okay, do you have a ksav yichus? They don't? Well, then we know that there's something the matter with your chazaka, and therefore we can't assume that you're a kohen miyuchas.
But still, that they eat truma.
Yes. So then the question becomes, ve'elamai gdola chazaka. So in that case, what does Rabbi Yossi mean to say when he says gdola chazaka? In that case, where do we see from that the power of chazaka? It's like this, because it gives them a greater power than they had before. The Me'ikra Achav Truma D'Rabbanon, originally when they were in Babel, he started out the same. Rabbi Yosef Gdola Chazaka, and brought the Pasuk from Ezra. So the greatness of Chazaka is the Me'ikra Achav Truma D'Rabbanon. Originally when they were in Babel, they were only eating Truma, which is D'Rabbanon, because the whole concept of Truma and Chala in Babel was only Drabanan, it's only a Takana of the Nabim. Well, those sites also have Truma Deraisa. Now, when they come to Eretz Yisrael, they're having an upgrade. They're allowed to eat Truma because Truma in Eretz Yisrael is Deraisa.
And they shouldn't.
No, that's what we're saying. That's the fact that Gzor L'Chazaka makes that possible. That's what Rabbi Yossi means when he says Gzor L'Chazaka. The fact that they had a Chazaka of eating Truma now is Gzorla. It's a very powerful thing, so much that it allows them to eat any kind of Truma, even Truma Deraisa.
Wow.
Or another possibility, we could say, no, we could answer that maybe these halalim, or sopik halalim, rather, we don't know for sure that they're halalim, but whatever, these people, maybe they can only eat truma derabanan, not truma deraisa, which means, Rashi says, okay, so one second, we'll explain that. What do we mean by truma derabanan versus deraisa? Rashi says that it means, Rashi learns in various places in Shas, that mid-deraisa, the only things that are obligated in Truma are grain, grapes, and olives. Anything else, any other kind of fruit, as well as vegetables, pointed out he's only Dirabana. The Rambam holds that all fruits are deraisa, but he agrees that vegetables are definitely Dirabana.
According to fruit, grain, grapes, and olives?
Grain, grapes, and olives, for sure. Everybody agrees that Chayav Dirabana. Vegetables, everybody agrees that Chayav Dirabana. Other kinds of fruits. Peaches, apples, oranges, etc. According to Rashi, or Drabanan, according to the Rambam, they're deraisa. Anyway, so we could answer that, fine, these Koyanim, these Bnei Chavaya, Bnei Akoyit, etc., will only be allowed to eat Truma Drabanan, namely, again, vegetables and, according to Rashi, fruit. Deraisa loyal, they will not be allowed to eat Truma Deraisa. And, so therefore, there's no problem. He must give them Truma Liyuksin Deraisa. When do we say, according to the opinion, that if you see somebody eating truma, you can assume that he's a koyan and consider him a koyan? That's only if he's eating truma deraisa. Midrabanan, if somebody is only eating truma deraban, that is actually not a valid reason to say that they're a koyan miyochus. So therefore, there won't be a problem. Let him eat their truma vegetables, and nobody will think on that basis that they're a koyan miyochus. Okay, then in that case, still we got to ask then what's the greatness of where are we seeing the greatness of chazaka then in that? Because when it was in Babel, there was no reason to make a gzera against them eating any kind of truma, because the maximum is they can only be eating truma derabanan anyway. Even grain and grapes and olives in Babel are only midrabanan. So therefore, there's no reason in Babel to make a gzera that let them not eat truma vegetables, because they may mistakenly end up eating truma of grain. Even if they do, it's only derabanan.
But
in Eretz Yisrael, in the end, when they're back in Eretz Yisrael, even though you would think that you ought to make a gzeira, let them not eat truma derabanan because they may come to eat truma deraisa. Nevertheless, we do not make that gzeira, and that, according to that understanding, is what Nehemiah is telling them, that you can continue eating the kind of truma derabanan, that you can continue eating truma derabanan like you were before.
That's
the meaning of gzeira chazaka. Okay, we have to ask then, fine, if we're saying that the whole discussion is about them eating truma, what do you mean truma? The Pasuk says that he says to them, you should not eat of the Holy of Holies, which sounds like it means karbanah. Which sounds like all he's saying is they're not allowed to eat kodshim, like chatos or osham or what have you, but they're allowed to eat anything else that Torah are allowed to. The answer is no.
Anything else, meaning what?
Meaning truma, meaning maybe even Kodshim Kalim. I mean, there's 24 Matnas Kohona, right? Yeah. The answer is no. That's not what it means. Hachikamar, loy midi dimikri kodesh, loy midi dimikri kodshim. It means that he's telling them, you will not be allowed to eat anything that is called kodesh, midaraita, and also not anything that is called kodshim, midaraita. Namely, loy midi dimikri kodesh, dechti v'chozor lo yechol kodesh. It says, in this week's parasha, v'chozor lo yechol kodesh, which means truma, that's where we learn the lab, that a zor is not allowed to eat it. Truma deraita, that's what we mean. So therefore, we see that truma is called kodesh, v'loy midi dimikri kodshim, and not anything that's called kodshim, d'amakra, the pasuk says, a few psukim later, uvach koin kisiyah l'ish zor, if a vach koin marries a zor, he v'trumas ha-kodshim lo yechol, she's not allowed to eat what is taken off from the kodshim. And we learn in a braisa that it means that she's never again, we learned this in Yevamos, we learned about this extensively, she will never come back to eating chod of a shoik, to eating the portions of a shlomim that are given to the koyanim, as we say in Ezra Mokoyim every morning, which is eaten by the koyanim and their families. So we learned in Yevamos, a bas kohenah married to Yisrael, as long as she's married to him, or as long as she has living descendants from him, she's not allowed to eat terumah. But if she's divorced or her husband dies, and she has no children, then she goes back to eating terumah. She does not go back to chol of a shoyk. Hebe terumah hakodshim lo yisrael means that she's not allowed to eat chol of a shoyk ever again. So we see that chol of a shoyk are called kodshim. So that's what Hatur Shasta and Nehemiah is telling them, that now we're back in Eretz Yisrael, there's going to be Terumah D'Oraita, there's going to be Chos V'Shoik, because there's going to be Kovanos again. Those you're not allowed to eat, but you will be allowed to eat Terumah D'Rabbanan.
So if you say that, you can say it's not such Gedola.
No, but that's what we're saying. Either we're
going Gedola only for Terumah, but not for Chos
V'Shoik. But that's the Gedola. That's the Gedola. Either we said, no, so we said two possibilities. According to the first explanation, we said that he's saying you will be allowed to eat Terumah D'Oraita. You just won't be allowed to eat Kovanos or Chos V'Shoik or whatever. According to the second explanation, we said you'll only be allowed to eat Terumah D'Rabbanan, but the Chiddush is we don't have to be, we Chachamim are not concerned that from eating Terumah D'Rabbanan you're going to come to eat Terumah D'Oraita.
Yes,
that is, but it is. You would think so. That's the Gedola Chazaka.
In any case, they come to eat Chazam
Shoyk. Yeah. Anyway, the bottom line is that we see from this whole discussion that there were Chalolim among them, because for all intents and purposes, these families are considered Chalolim, with the exception that we're allowing them to eat Terumah D'Rabbanan. Or maybe even dirt eyes, the case may be. Okay, next groups in the Mishnah, we said Gerim and Haruri, we said there were Gerim and there were freed slaves. Menalon, where do we see that there were those groups among them coming to Eretz Yisrael? Amar Abchista, to Amakra, because the Pasuk says, but when they celebrated their first Pesach after the Beis Hamikdash was rebuilt, V'cholan Nivdo Mitumas Goyah Ha'oras Aleihem, anybody who had separated themselves from the tumah of the nations of the land to them, meaning and joining eating the Korban Pesach. So what does that mean? It means Goyim would abandon the tumah of the Goyim and become Jews, and it also includes Avadim who would abandon the tumah of being Knanim and been free. And before Shem explain, I think the Rosh explained that the one thing is because it says v'chol, therefore we can learn both groups. That it means both Goyim who became Gerim and Avadim Knanim who became free. Next, Mamzerim in Olam. Where do we see the word Mamzerim among them? Dichtiv, you have a pasuk as follows. In Nehemiah, it mentions that it says when Nehemiah came to Yerushalayim and started making plans to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim, Vayishma Sanballat Hachoroni Vitovia Havadamun. It says that Sanballat was from Choron, from Beit Choron, I guess, in Eretz Yisrael. And Tovia, who was an Ammoni slave, they heard about it, and it upset them, and throughout the rest of the next few chapters of Nehemiah, describes how they kept on trying to harass him, and then prevent the walls from being built, and et cetera, all kinds, cause them all kinds of trouble. Later on it says, Kirabim Yehuda Balish Shavuoloi, there were many Jews in Yehuda who had a covenant, who had business deals or whatever, with him, meaning Tovia, because he was a son-in-law of Shchanya ben Arach, who was Yisrael, and this Tovia had a son Yehoichanan who married the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechia, also Yisrael. So in other words, so the father Tovia, not the father Tovia, even though he's an Eved Hamoni, is married to a Jewish woman, the daughter of Shchanya ben Arach, and his son is also married to a Jewish woman. Now, our Mishnah then will hold that if a goy or an eved, in this case, actually it could be either. Sanballat was a goy, Tovia was an eved. So one or the other, whichever one the pasuk is referring to, whether that was the son-in-law or the father-in-law, or whatever, would be. So children from those marriages would be mamzerim.
Could not marry
that. That's the point. In other words, that if we're saying that, let's go with the Tovia. If we're saying that Tovia is married to Shchanya ben Arach's daughter, it means any children they have will be mamzerim. If his son Yehoichanan is married to Meshulam ben Berechia's daughter, then again, any children they have will be mamzerim. According to that, so there you go. They were mamzerim. Okay, the Gemara says Hanichal Mandoma Vlad Mamzer. Okay, then that works out according to the opinion. Then in that case, a Vlad Mamzer, a little Mandoma Vlad Kosher, according to the opinion, which we learned at the end of the previous parak, that the child of a Goyish father and a Jewish mother is actually Kosher. We have it. It's a Machlokas in a few places in the Gemara. We learned it in Yevamos. I don't remember who the opinions were, but we learned it in Yevamos, and yeah. So according to the opinion of Vlad Kosher, Ma'i Kalamema, then what are you talking about? Where do you see the Mamzerim? The two, and not only that, you're assuming that both these marriages produce children. Maybe they didn't. I mean, okay, in the case of Tovia and the daughter of Shani ben Arach, of course they had children because they had Yehochanan, his son. But not necessarily, because maybe this Yehochanan was a son from another wife. And in the case of Yehochanan himself, with the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechia, who says they had children? So again, who says there were actually any mamzerim produced from either of these marriages, even if you say the child is a mamzer? The two, and a third thing, my dehacha habaluhu slikku, who says that these children, if we assume there were children, were born in Bavel and went up to Eretz Yisrael with Zerubbabel's group or with Ezra's group, Dilma Hasan Havel, maybe they were there all along. This Shanya ben Arach, in Eretz Yisrael. We know after the Churban, there were the few Jews who remained over there with Gedalia ben Achisam. Afterwards, he was assassinated, and they all ran away to Mitzrayim. But still, there may have been individual Jews, one or another, who managed to hang on in there somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. But who says that they came? Yeah. So you don't have any proof from that the woman did. No. Ela mehacha. So no. Rather, we have the proof that the woman Zerim comes from a different pasuk. In that whole list of the people who came with Zerubbabel's group, and again, the list is repeated on later on in Nehemiah. Nehemiah says that after I built the walls of Yerushalayim and I wanted to make sure that people are going to actually settle there, then I went over this old Sefer Yochsin and then found who actually came here. So the Pasuk says that after it lists, again, it starts by listing the people of Yehuda, Binyamin, the Kohenim, the Levim, the Nesinim, etc. After that it says, the Ela Ha'olim Tel Melach Tel Charsha, the following are the people who came up from Tel Melach and Tel Charsha, Kruv Adon V'Imer. It sounds like it means these are the names of places that they came from. With the Gemara, we're going to see that's not necessarily like that. For one thing, because the Pasuk has no particular reason, the Marshal says, I think, the Pasuk has no particular reason to mention where they came from any more than any of the other groups. Yeah, they came from somewhere in Babel. Who cares about the exact location? The Pasuk continues, V'lo yachlu lahagid beis avosim v'zarim im Yisrael heim. They could not tell their father's household or their descendants if they're from the Jews. So what does this mean? We have three, so we have Tel Melach, we have Tel Charsha, and we have Kruv Adon and Imer. So what does all this mean? Tel Melach means Eilu b'nei Adam sh'deim ma'aseim ma'aseh Sodom sh'nap kol Tel Melach. These are people who act like the way the people in Sodom acted, where Sodom was turned into a heap of salt. How do the people in Sodom act? Rashi brings from a Gemara in Sanhedrin that they were involved among the various averus that they were involved in was Znus, Arayus. Rashi brings from a Gemara over there in Sanhedrin that we all know about the famous corrupt laws of the Sodomim. One of them was that if one person hit somebody else's wife and made her miscarry, instead of making him pay for the damages, which would be the halacha and the Torah, for example, the Sodomi judges would tell him, you take her home and you impregnate her again, get her pregnant again, and then return her to her husband. So therefore, and Marshall points out you don't even need that. You have the right there in the pasuk. You have when the malachim are coming over there in Lloyd's house that they're saying bring them out and let's do not kill them. Let's do mishkan zocher with them. So we see that they were involved in no. So therefore,
Marshall says that.
No, the pasuk says it. Means they wanted to sodomize them. That's where they get the word sodomy from. Taka. Sodomy means ma'isus doim. Anyway. The point is that Tel Melach, therefore, refers to mamzerim, people who are born from improper unions, like the kind they used to do in Yisrael. Tel Charsha, Zeshekur Da'aba Ve'imim Meshatakta. The pasuk continues, Tel Charsha, so Charsha is Meloshin Cheresh, as in being quiet. Actually, Rashi says Meloshin Machrish, from Meloshin of being quiet. Therefore, Tel Charsha refers to people who, when he says, like Rashi said on the Mishnah, he says, so-and-so is my father, and his mother tells him, be quiet. I don't know if that's your father or not. So Tel Charsha, therefore, are the Shtuki. Therefore, we see that they were Shtuki. And when the passage continues, V'lo yochlo lahagid beis avosim v'zarim im Yisrael heim, zeru asuki, sh'nasef min ashuk. When it says that they didn't know their father's family, beis avosim means their father's family, zarim means their mother's family, they don't even know b'chlal if they're from Jews, that's an asuki. A Sufi at least knows that his mother was a Jew, and a Sufi doesn't even know that.
They know nothing,
right. And Marshal says a different limud, that since the Pasuk is saying, im Yisrael heim, we darish in the word im as if it said aim. So therefore, lo yochlo lahagid beis avosim, and they couldn't say their father's family, aim mi Yisrael heim, and even whether their mother is Jewish. Yeah. So that's where we see that there were the mamzerim, the Sufi, and the Asufi.
They were the Asufi, in other words, mamzerim vadai?
No, they're Sufi mamzerim, that's the whole point. After all, you find a child in the street, you bring him into your house and you adopt him. You don't know who were his parents. You don't know if his mother was Jewish or not. You don't know if his father was Jewish or not. You don't know if either of his parents was a mamzer or a nothing or what have you. You don't know. Okay. So now, okay, so we've explained what Tel Melach, Ter Chalsha, and Lo Yochu mean. What about the part in the middle? We said Kruv Adren V'Imer. What do those mean? Again, we're not going to assume that those are just the names of the places they came from, because again, the Pasuk has no particular reason to mention it. Actually, on the Pasuk, there on the Pasuk, we'll explain that maybe those are the names of some of the families. The problem with that is that the next Pasuk continues with the actual names of the families, B'nei Deloya, B'nei this, B'nei that. So yeah. Okay. So what does it mean, Kruv Adren V'Imer? Omer Abba Bo, Omer Odin, it means like this. Odin, the master, meaning Abishter, said, Ani amarti yiyu Yisrael apanei chashuvim kekruv. I wanted that the Jewish people should be as important in my presence as the kruvim, the chayes hakodesh, one of their faces, the face of a kruv, where the shechina rests on them. Well, the point is that the shechina rests on the malachim, as we're going to say, the Gemara is going to say later that the shechina only rests on the families of Jews that know their yichus. Also, one of the Mephoshim, I don't remember which one now, talks about the idea of the Kruvim. We know the Kruvim on top of the Arim. We know you had there was a male and a female one, and when Yisrael Oysen and the Sodesh HaMokim, they face each other. So therefore, the Kruvim represent a proper marriage between a husband and a wife.
One was male, one was
female. One was a male figure, one was a female figure, yeah. They were actually in the form of children, but whatever, the point is, yeah. So the Eved says, I wanted the Jewish people to be as important to me as a Kruv. And look what they did. They made themselves like leopards, where leopards are promiscuous creatures. They don't stay with their mate. So therefore, so kruv is a so in other words, kruv adar and v'imer is kruv adar. And the Ebishter is saying, I want them to be like kruv v'imer. So instead, what is it? So Marshal says, where do you get nomer from that? Rashi says the nun of not Marshal, he says the nun of adar goes together with the word imer to make the word nomer. So therefore, they were just saying they're promiscuous like leopards. And Chutzpahdik also, leopards are azistic creatures, and there's an association.
Which animals
are Kruvim? Kruvim, they basically looked like people. They had human faces, and they had wings.
So they're birds. So form of birds?
No, they're the form of humans with wings. But the Kruvim, as in the Chayes HaKodesh, the way Yechezkel describes them is they're creatures that have four faces, one in each direction, Pnei Shor, Pnei Aryeh, and then one of the faces is Pnei Kruv, the face of a child. Yeah. Okay. Ikadamri, another version of this teaching, is Omer Rav Abba, Omer Odin, that we can darshan these words differently in praise of the Jewish people, that the Odin, the master of the world, the Eved says, even though look how the Jewish people are messing up. They made themselves like a leopard. They're promiscuous, and therefore you have mamzerim and shesukim and asufim among them. Hein chashuvim lefanei kekruv, nevertheless they're as important in front of me as a kruv, as a chayes hakodesh. Because after all, I used to all akvishachalti Yisrael. Besides that, Mephoshim point out, there's the famous Mishnah in Hurriyat that says Mamzer Tamid Chacham Koyin Mekoyin Gadol Amoris, that even a Mamzer can become a Tamid Chacham and he outranks even a Koyin Gadol as an Amoris. So there you go. Even a Mamzer, even when he comes from people who act like a number, nevertheless he can be as important to the Eved as a Kruv, who protects the Oren Kodesh.
Outside the more important.
In the sense that Torah outranks everything else.
Okay, so give us an example.
So in Hurriyat, if it talks about, for example, if you have two Jews who have to be rescued from captivity, let's say, which one do you do first? The Talmid Chacham goes in front of the Kohen Gadol. If the Kohen Gadol is an Amor. There's a few things over there. If both of them are poor, which one do you give tzedakah to first? The whole thing over there, yeah. Omer Rav Abba Chana. Anybody who marries a wife who is unsuitable for him. So later on, what does it mean unsuitable? Later on, there's another vote on this about Shein Hegenes Loi. And over there, Rashi explains it means that she's actually a psul yichus. She's a mamzeret or what have you. Here, maybe it means the same thing. Or the Ramaphoshim will explain, not necessarily doesn't mean that. It means she's not on the level that he should be on. For example, he's a Talmid Chacham and she's the daughter of an Amoris, where the Gemara says in Sofim that that's not really the right thing to do. Anyway, so a man marries a woman who's not suitable for him in Yichus or in Torah or whatever it is. Mala, all of our custom, kilo kosher, the whole other color of the Zorei Melech. The Pasuk considers it on such a person as if he plowed up the whole world and planted it with salt. Which means, in other words, if you plant salt, not only you're not going to grow anything, but you're destroying the earth. So that's what somebody like this is doing. So he's destroying the yichus of his family. Yeah. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Ve'elo elu mitel melach tel chausha." We're darshaning the pasuk in the same way. Melach means salt. Chausha here we're not darshaning chausha meloshen charut meloshen cheresh quiet, but rather meloshen macharesha a plow. So tel melach tel chausha, like somebody's plowing up the ground, but he's not doing anything useful. He's planting up a salt instead. Anybody who marries a woman for the sake of money, again, it may mean where she's actually it may mean that she's actually a psul yichus, or it may even be actually in Shulchan Aruch brings that Amar brings that it means even a kosher woman. Don't marry a woman for the sake of money. Having like bonim she'enim mehuganim, he will have children who are improper, who are no good, ameoret, chutzpedet, or what have you. Shenema, Bashem Bogdu, as the pasuk says, they have been unfaithful to Hashem. Ki bonim zorim yolodu, because they had strange children. Which means, again, Rashi says we're talking about a woman who's posel, so a mamzeres or what have you. She's posel to him, but he married her for the sake of money, money that people promised him, or money that she has, or whatever. So therefore, he's going to have bonim zorim children who are estranged from the Eibishter. The Shema Tema Mammon Polat, you might say, okay, at least fine, the children are goners, but at least the money will be intact. No, Talmud Lomar, as the pasuk continues, Asa Yochlem Chodesh Es Chalkehem. Now, the month will eat up their portion. The Shema Tema Chalkehem Es Chalkehem. Well, wait. So, Asa Yochlem, in other words, will be consumed. The Shema Tema Chalkehem Es Chalkehem. Okay, so you might say, meaning, okay, his portion will be destroyed, not hers. Let's say Rashi says his portion means Nichleton Barzel. No, the point is he's marrying her even though she has a gap. So he's marrying her for her money, let's say. So let's say, for example, okay, so we could say the Nichset Son Barzo, which then effectively completely belonged to him. He just has to reimburse her for them afterwards. Maybe those will be destroyed. Maybe Chelka, maybe her portion, namely the Nichset Malug, which basically belongs to her, except that he gets the payers. After all, she didn't do such an Easter. Right. That Rashi says, because after all, she's looking to marry a Miyuchas, not her fault in a way. But maybe her portion will stay intact. No, Talmud Lomar Chalkehem. Therefore, no, the pasuk says their portion, in plural. Both. Yeah. V'shem Hashem l'zman merubah. So you might say, okay, but it'll take a long time for it to be destroyed. No, Talmud Lomar Chodesh. No, because the pasuk continues the month. My Nashma, what do you mean a month? Amar Rav Nachman, it's a Chodesh Nichnes v'Chodesh Yetzeh. It means a month goes in and a month comes out. U'mamonim Ovad, and then their money is destroyed. Either it means that literally it's all gone within a month, or Marshall says it doesn't necessarily mean it's gone within a month. It just means month by month it'll get less and less until it's all gone.